Welcome, calling the State Affairs Committee to order at 3:08 p.m. Thursday, March 2nd, in the Max Grunberg Room of the Alaska Capitol. Will the Secretary please call the roll?
Representative Knopf, Representative Wolf, Representative Kopp, Representative Ledoux, Representative Birch.
Here.
Representative Johnson.
Here.
Representative Kopp.
Presently here.
Representative Josephson. Chair Price Tompkins.
Here. And with four members present, we have the bare minimum quorum to conduct business. And welcome, Representative Thompson. Before we get to the three items on today's agenda, I wanted to touch base on confirmation hearings. And so there's a whole stack of nominees from the governor for appointment to the different departments and agencies that State Affairs has jurisdiction for. And what I wanted to suggest to committee members, although realizing this will have to be reiterated to the three committee members who are not present, is that we can distribute a list of all those nominees to the committee, both a list and upon request or whatever resumes are of interest to committee members. And committee members can flag any nominees that are of interest, and we can sort of compile which nominees are of interest to the committee, and we can sort of focus on those for confirmation hearings and sort of ellipse over those who are not of interest to the committee and forward those de facto to the floor for joint session confirmation vote. Representative Birch.
Just a general question for you on qualifications. For instance, as a registered engineer, I'm somewhat familiar with the architects, engineers, and land surveyors. By statute, there are threshold requirements for anybody to be, you have to be an engineer to be to fill the engineer spot. So my question is, when nominations are provided, is there any sort of documentation that the people that are proposed fulfill and meet the minimum qualifications that are necessary by skill set, ability, certification, or whatever to fill that position? Is all that legwork done? And so I'm trying to figure out the depth of engagement that anybody in the legislature would have to have regarding any appointment.
Yeah, that's a great question, Representative Birch. I don't know the answer, although I would assume that the governor's office and their boards and commissions section does that work, but we can confirm that. And I'm at this point mostly just sort of sharing the thinking process, and what we're going to aim to do is put all of this into writing and revise it as needed if this process doesn't make sense. But we'll get back to you on that point, and I'll make a note of it.
Just a point of interest.
Yeah, good question. And I think there's just such a stack of nominees, and many of them are pretty perfunctory, that in the interest of time, unless there's active committee interest in certain nominees, this might be the most efficient way to go. But again, process subject to revision. Representative Tucker.
So if I'm understanding correctly, that we will have a list of those with attached resumes, and then we just respond to the ones that we want to bring to the committee.
Yeah, okay. And we can sort of take everyone's feedback and identify, and then we'll schedule accordingly. Just to sort of doubly confirm, we'll put out our thinking on this process in writing, just so it's clear to everyone, and then we can sort of proceed accordingly. Okay, great. Well, with that bit of housekeeping, the sponsor of our first bill today, House Bill 97, repealing to Alaska Fire Standards Council tax credits, is free. This is the second hearing on the bill, and I guess actually we don't necessarily need the sponsor to come up, since I believe we exhausted our questions in the first hearing. And today we have both public testimony as well as amendments, and perhaps start with an amendment on the table. Representative Johnson.
So do you want me to move the amendment, Mr. Chair?
That,
I haven't done that before. This is kind of new for me. Okay, I would like to move amendment number one.
And I'll object for purposes of discussion. Representative Johnson, could you speak to the amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment would make the repeal of the insurance tax credit for gifts given to the Alaska Fire Standards Council become effective on January 1, 2019, rather than 2022. I offer this amendment and remind members that the sponsor has previously stated that he would not be unhappy if it ended sooner.
Thank you. And does the sponsor have any comment on amendment number one?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Steve Thompson, House of Representatives, District 2 out of Fairbanks. Through the chair, this is a friendly amendment. I have no problem with it. I think it's sensible. So I'm in favor of it, yes.
Thank you, Representative Thompson. I will remove my objection to amendment number one. Is there any further objection to amendment number one? Seeing no further objection, amendment number one, 30-LS0180/A.1 is adopted by the committee. And there are no further amendments that have been submitted. And I also see no public testimony online. At this time, in committee discussion or interest in debating the merits of House Bill 97. We're mollified. This is just a resounding reaction of support. Representative Birch.
I just want to say this was particularly well presented, well documented, well backed up, and we had basically a good sponsor statement, very descriptive, and urge a yes vote. Thanks.
Thank you, Representative Birch. I would echo those comments. And at this time, is there a motion to move this bill from committee?
Mr. Chair, Representative Tuck. So this is so I move House Bill 97 out of committee, version 30-LS0180/A, with attached zero as amended, with attached zero fiscal note.
Is there an objection to the motion? Seeing no objection, House Bill 97, as amended, moves from committee with attached zero fiscal note. And we'll do the paperwork at the end of the committee hearing per usual. Thank you, Representative Thompson and Mr. Bevshinsky.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee.
And that will take us to the next item on today's agenda, which is House Bill 44, which is really just married with House Concurrent Resolution 1, so sort of have a twofer. This is the fourth hearing for House Bill 44, and would quickly like to recognize Representative Wohl, who arrived at 317, and it looks like we might have a quick question from Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just wondering if you plan on moving this out of committee today, this HB 44.
No.
Okay.
And so the thinking right now, good question on process, is we have a few amendments, or I guess just one amendment for each of the two pieces of legislation, HB 44 and HCR 1 respectively. Take action on amendments, hold the bill, open both pieces of legislation up for public testimony next Tuesday, and then take committee action at that time. So on House Bill 44, the first of these next two pieces of legislation, there are amendments on the table, and starting with House Bill 44 and recognizing Representative Ledoux, who just arrived at 318, there is an amendment from Representative Ledoux. And perhaps we can take a brief at-ease just to touch bases. Going back on the record, so with House Bill 44, there's one amendment as submitted. Representative Ledoux.
Yeah, I move amendment number one.
I'll object for the purposes of the discussion.
Representative Ledoux.
Okay, I think amendment number one is relatively self-explanatory. It is on page 2 and lines 26 to 28. And it's deleting a substantial class of persons to which the legislator or the family member who has a financial interest belongs as a member of a profession, occupation, industry, or region. And it inserts instead the general public. And then on page 2, line 31, let's take an at ease.
Brief at ease. On the record, and as Representative Ledoux was overviewing the amendment, there was a question on the drafting and formatting of the amendment, at which time I think I'll ask if Dan Wayne, who's online, perhaps could speak to the amendment, lines 7 through 11, and the formatting of the amendment. Mr. Wayne?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is Dan Wayne from Legislative Legal. The lines you're talking about, line 7 and through line 11 of the amendment, is a conforming change. It changes, it's necessary because of language that's taken out by lines 2 through 4 of the amendment. So we move that language to the end of the subsection. Put it in uppercase letters and brackets so that it can be seen so that the change can be understood and seen by all.
Thank you, Mr. Wayne. Representative Ledoux?
Okay, thank you very much. Appreciate that explanation. And then finally, on page 3, lines 8 through 10, it deletes a substantial class of persons to which the person belongs as a member of a profession, occupation, industry, or region, and inserts the general public. So the idea is that, for example, if you're a member, let's say, of the alcohol industry, and so that a particular bill affects all of the alcohol industry, but doesn't affect your business any more than it affects the industry in general. Under the way the bill is written now, you'd be able to vote on that given piece of legislation. Under the amendments, if it's affecting you as a member of the alcohol industry, or the tobacco industry, or the union industry, or any other industry, and it's affecting that industry more than the general public, you would not be able to vote on any particular bill. So that's the idea of this amendment.
Thank you, Representative Ledoux. Any questions, Representative Tuck?
Okay, just so I make sure I understand. So if we have, like, a reduction of the cruise ship head tax, I happen to have a cruise line, then I would not be permitted to vote. I would not be permitted to vote in that situation, but I wouldn't be permitted to vote anyway, right? I'm still trying to get my mind wrapped around the amendment. So it sounds like that even though I'm not personally, my company, my cruise line, isn't being isolated from other cruise lines, I still would not be able to vote because I am impacting my cruise line and other cruise lines over the general public.
You got it.
Okay.
Further questions for Representative Ledoux? Representative Wall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I think I understand the intent of the amendment. So basically, if you're involved in any industry and the bill affects that industry, and assuming the whole general public isn't in that population, you can't, you'd be not allowed, well, you'd have to self-remove yourself from voting on that bill, according to this.
That's correct. If you have the financial interest, and I think someplace else in the bill we describe financial interest.
Okay. Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Representative Wall.
Thank you. And I guess this was a issue before. Well, so there would have to be a financial interest. It can't just be a. And I'm going to take a second to think about an example that, like a tax, would affect you financially. But, you know, let's say there's a union issue and it affects working conditions or hours of lunch or something like that, you may not, it may not be directly financial, but it would affect all the people within that class of worker, which is different than the general public. That everyone, that person who's in that class, who's a lawmaker, could not, would be, would have a conflict of interest as well, correct?
Let's go over the example again.
I guess my question goes back to the financial interest. It has to be a fine, and that's maybe to the bill sponsor. But I understand your amendment, and I guess that's all we're really talking about right now. So,
Perhaps while you mull that over, yep. Representative Tuck, a question?
Yeah, so. So I'm trying to put in a real-life example for myself. I'm an electrician by trade. If we put in new safety standards for the electrical industry, which doesn't necessarily financially benefit me, I guess if it doesn't financially benefit me, this amendment wouldn't apply. So it has to be a financial benefit, which we have defined elsewhere in the bill.
Well, actually, let's ask the bill sponsor whether there's...
I was seeing a nod in the audience. Mr. Johnston, please put yourself on the record. And
Ryan Johnston, staff to Representative Gren. From our interpretation of this amendment, it would have to be because it is the financial gain or loss. That's the language we see here. So in the example that Representative Tuck gave, I think that would be a situation where you wouldn't be required to request to abstain. That would be a situation where there's not a monetary gain or harm to you individually if it affected the safety requirements or the number of hours needed for training in that occupation. We wouldn't see that as a direct financial benefit or harm. That
Follow
answer
up?
Was as clear as mud.
Yeah, so let's take it up for example, continuing education credits. It does cost to take some additional classes, but if we change it from 16 credits per 2 years to 32 credits per 2 years, that would be not a financial gain, financial hardship, but if we were to reduce it from 16 down to 8 hours for 2 years, and being an electrician and having to renew my license and working in that industry, would that mean that I would not be able to vote because I own a license in that industry? I would not be able to vote because it is a financial gain. I would not have to spend so much money annually for continuing education credits.
And I wonder if we could maybe direct that question to Mr. Wayne, and I'm also realizing that Jerry Anderson could be a helpful source here, but he is not online. For now... Mr. Wayne, did you hear Representative Tuck's question? If so, could you speak to it?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. This is Dan Wayne from Ledge Legal. I heard the question, I think. First of all, to correct a statement that was made, it wouldn't necessarily have to be a financial increase. It could also be a financial decrease in the hypothetical given the effect on the amount of credits that the person would have to pay for, whether it goes up and down if the if it constitutes a if the effect on the financial interests of the legislator is substantial, or I'm sorry, is greater than the effect on the general public, then the legislator couldn't vote, or would have to declare a conflict, let's put it that way.
Representative Ledoux.
Well, Mr. Wayne, wouldn't the there's no change in the interest, would still have to be a substantial interest. But what has changed would be the provision that it would have to be greater, the effect would have to be greater than it is on the general public. So we're not changing in this amendment the fact that the interest still has to be substantial.
That's right. No, the amendment doesn't change that.
So, for example, if somebody owed $100 worth of stock in a cruise ship enterprise, that probably wouldn't be viewed as a substantial interest, correct?
Representative Ledoux, through the chair, this is Dan Wayne. I agree that it probably wouldn't be. The Ethics Committee is the final arbiter of that, and I think you're probably right.
Representative Wall.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess this goes, the fact that all these questions, we get a little mired, and the answer always seems to be the ethics board, or that's what gives me pause on the whole thing, that it's all going to funnel into this log jam of, that's what gives me pause.
Representative Ledoux.
Can I just respond to that? Actually, it won't just funnel into the ethics board, because that's one of the things that one would be voting on. Somebody recuses themselves and, you know, with the utmost caution, declares the conflict. And then the legislature, in its wisdom, gets to decide whether or not it makes sense to recuse somebody for that particular thing. So if somebody owns $100 worth of stock, they probably just ought to declare it anyway. But then I can't imagine somebody saying, oh, yeah, you need to recuse yourself on a cruise ship tax because you own $100 worth of stock. But if you own $10,000 or $20,000 or $30,000, that becomes a matter of, that's the kind of thing that we're going to be voting on.
Representative Birch.
I, too, have some concerns about this entire proposal. I've shared them with folks that have contacted me. I think the dialogue around this table is, Mr. Chairman, is certainly an indication of the entanglements that we're going to end up on the floor trying to slice and dice, what is, in fact, a sufficient conflict to rise to the occasion of being a concern. Everybody in this building, every elected legislator in this building has something else going on in their life, hopefully. And the presumption is that the public is made aware of that through the public official financial disclosure. The public is made aware of that certainly through the crucible, if you will, of primary and general elections, when most of us have or many of us have had opponents in a primary and a general that are more than willing to widely illustrate whatever their perception is of a conflict. I think the process as it exists now, as I understand it from those that have been here longer than I have, the process as I understand it is a member stands up, announces that they believe they may have a conflict, and that is made on the floor in front of the body. If there's an objection in the body, basically the individual is permitted, after they've declared their conflict, to vote or not vote. And if there's an objection, then they basically can vote. If there's not an objection, then see how does that work. There's it takes one objection on the body to basically permit a person that announces their what they perceive to be a conflict to move forward. So I don't know. I think it's just going to be a real tangle trying to sort through how this is going to work on the fly, and with somebody putting a hand up and making an announcement. I mean, it's the good representative from Kenai and I have had some discussions, and it works a little differently at a local government level, where you basically delegate to the presiding officer the decision, and then that rule can be overturned by the body. But I see some huge delays in this. I mean, I just see trying to go through a process. I think you've got something that works. I think people are people have plenty of checks and balances vis-a-vis the public disclosure and everything else. So I'm waiting to see, but this discussion is an indication to me of how entangled we're going to end up if we move forward with something like this. Thank you.
And Representative Tucker, comment?
Yeah, I just want to make sure. Were you referring to the whole bill or were you referring to the amendment?
I'm just referring to the whole bill.
Okay.
Any further comments or questions on amendment number one? Representative Wohl, do you maintain your objection?
No.
Is there further objection? Seeing none, amendment number one is adopted. And there are no further objections, or rather amendments, for House Bill 44, at least as submitted. And that will take us to the next piece of legislation on today's docket, HCR 1. And Representative, well, at the very beginning, we're doing amendments today, and then next Tuesday look at public testimony, debating the bill as a whole, and potentially taking action. So for the third item on today's agenda, HCR 1, we're also taking amendments today, and there is one amendment. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move amendment number one, which is...
All object for purposes of discussion.
Okay. Offering this amendment as a way to avoid the possible issue of agreeing to allow a member to abstain from voting in order to influence the passage of a bill or resolution by requiring a three-quarter vote of 30 members instead of a simple majority. It is more likely you would need members of both a majority and minority to consent. It also takes away a perception that the vote on this vote on abstaining could be used as a tool to keep someone from out of the voting process.
Any questions for Representative Johnson? I'll withdraw my objection. Representative Tuck.
That went kind of fast. Can you slow down and say it one more time? I'm sorry, because I wasn't quite following. It was very faint, and it was very fast.
Representative Johnson, maybe reintroduce the amendment.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move amendment number one, offering this amendment as a way to avoid the possible issue of agreeing to allow a member to abstain from voting in order to influence the passage of a bill or resolution by requiring a three-quarter vote or 30 members instead of a simple majority. It is more likely that you would need members of both the majority and minority to consent.
Any questions, Representative Ledoux?
Yes, I'd like to know whether or not the sponsor of the bill considers this a friendly or an unfriendly amendment.
Ryan Johnson, staff for Representative Grin. I won't speak for Representative Grin, but through our research, we've seen 28 states that use a vote, and 24 of those 28 use a majority vote. The majority vote came from our current statute at the municipal level, so we used it for continuity's sake. And again, I won't speak for Representative Gren, but I know that we use the majority vote for those reasons of continuity, and also just as a benchmark from other states as well.
Thank you.
If I may, Representative Tuck.
And do you know what the other four states do?
Through the chair, Representative Tuck, they use a two-thirds. So 24 of the 28 use a majority vote, and then four of the 28 use a two-thirds.
So.
Representative Ledoux.
So nobody uses a three-quarters.
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, I have not seen a three-quarters vote for a abstention, no.
Mr. Representative Johnson.
Thank you. And my intent was certainly not to have an unfriendly amendment.
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, very understandable. It's the committee process, so we appreciate it very much.
Representative Wall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was thinking of offering an amendment for a two-thirds vote, but then I saw the three-quarter vote amendment, so I withheld mine. But I'm in support of the non-simple majority vote.
Noted. Thank you, Representative Wall. Good to know. Further questions for the sponsor or comments on amendment number one to HCR 1? Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I would like to offer an amendment to the amendment and bring it down to two-thirds vote.
Is there an objection?
I won't object. Just object, I guess. I'm just trying to think. I'm trying to think what two-thirds of 40 people are is 27. Really does. Yeah, okay.
And if I may speak to the amendment.
Representative Tuck.
There is very, very few votes that we take at three-quarter. The only two that I can think of, well, only one really is the three-quarter for the constitutional budget reserve. So it's a very, very high standard. We have a lot of two-thirds votes requirements, effective date clauses,
court
rulings. So it's bringing it up to those higher, high levels already. So I think that it's more than 51% vote, obviously, but less than a three-quarter vote, obviously. But I think this would be probably more palatable by the rest of the legislators.
Representative Johnson, any comment or question? Any further comment or question on the amendment to amendment number one to HCR 1? Do you maintain your objection, Representative Johnson?
What's that?
Do you maintain your objection?
Excuse me. I will remove whatever objection I had.
Okay. Is there further objection to the amendment to the amendment? Seeing none, the amendment to amendment number one is adopted, which brings us back to amendment number one, as amended, to HCR 1. Trying to replay where we are. I believe I objected for purposes of discussion to amendment number one. Are there further questions on amendment number one as amended? I'll remove my objection to amendment number one. Is there further objection to amendment number one? Seeing none, amendment number one passes, which takes us through the run of all amendments to HCR 1. So with that, we're done for today, but I want to reemphasize that this will be coming back to the committee on Tuesday for public testimony and possible action by the committee for both HB 44 and HCR 1. Representative Wool, did you have a question?
Brief at ease. I was also interested in a conceptual amendment, which would be to sunset the bill. So I take it for a test drive, basically, to see in practice if it runs smoothly or if we have a lot of roadblocks. Seeing as I know a lot of other states do it, it'll probably be fine, but that was just my sort of inclination.
But then I was told that we can't tell a future legislature what to do. I'm not, but I know there's sunsets in other things. I know this is a resolution, so I don't know what the legal opinion is on that. And I know this won't take effect until the next as I understand it, it will not take effect until a year from now, or more than 2 years from now. Correct? The 31st legislature, is that correct?
Mr. Johnson?
Ryan Johnson, staff representative Grin. Through the chair, Representative Wolf, so currently the bill is written to take effect for the next year's session up until the 31st. And when my discussions with Ledge Legal was that putting a three-year sunset, it would bind the 31st legislature to adopting Uniform Rule 34B outside of the normal procedure of adopting the rules prior to that session. So it technically already has a sunset to go up before the 31st and then could be either changed or adopted again for the 31st. So that was the binding part of it, is that this runs up until the 31st and then would be readopted.
And Representative Wolf, we also have Dan Wayne online, perhaps to speak to that question about amending resolutions and uniform rules, if that would be helpful.
Yes, I guess just to follow up on what the staffer to Representative Grin said, so you're saying that it'll start next year, and when the 31st legislature starts, we're going to have to vote to adopt it or not?
Yeah,
it comes up to vote again.
Yes. Through the chair, Representative Wolf, yes, that is the timeline.
Thank you.
And Representative Wolf, any questions for Dan Wayne of Legislative Legal?
Unless we somehow got it wrong, I'm feeling happy with the explanation I got.
Okay. And if I may, Representative Wolf, just quickly, I imagine maybe ask Mr. Wayne to speak to the committee discussion as you're hearing it, and if there's any comments you want to make, or if we are getting it right or if we're getting it wrong.
This is Dan Wayne, Mr. Chairman. I've been listening to the discussion and looking through the uniform rules. I would have to take some time to find out what the requirements are for rules to be expire and be readopted. It's kind of a uniform rules question, and I'm not ready to answer it on the fly here today.
And with that in mind, maybe just to help us all sleep easier at night, if there ends up being sort of legal space for an amendment to that effect, Representative Wolf, we can take it up on Tuesday at the very front of the meeting to preserve the opportunity. Representative Ledoux.
I was just going to ask, don't the uniform rules stay in effect up until they're readopted by the 31st legislature? So we really wouldn't, let's just assume for a second that this passed and the uniform rules were changed. We wouldn't be voting all over again on this specific uniform rule. We'd be at the very beginning of the session be voting on all of the uniform rules. Is my understanding correct?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, that is correct. And again, I could be wrong, but I was told that we can amend the uniform rules prior to that adoption. And then, so that's where the room comes in, that if Representative Wool still held an objection and wanted it to be sunsetted, he could have put up an amendment to the uniform rules and to go back to the unanimous consent or whatever whatever his amendment might be, but that it automatically sunsets and that it has to be readopted gives the room to change the uniform rule back or to something different, but we couldn't put it into the 31st because of that adoption process. And I'll check in with who I talked to in Ledge Legal and confirm that.
And I was asking that question to Mr. Wayne.
Oh, apologies.
More perspective is never a bad thing, Mr. Johnson. Mr. Wayne, do you have an answer to Representative Ledoux's question?
Representative Ledoux through the chair. This is Dan Wayne from Ledge Legal. I think what we're talking about is Uniform Rules 53 and adoption and amendment of rules. And it does say that the uniform rules of each legislature shall be adopted in joint session by a majority vote of the full membership of each house. And then after that, they can only be amended by adoption of a concurrent resolution by a two-thirds vote of the full membership of each house. So I think I agree with the explanation that Ryan McAllister gave just a moment ago.
Okay.
Any further question, Representative Ledoux?
Thank you.
All right. Any further questions on the subject? And I should note that we have been joined by Jerry Anderson, but we can, if there are further questions for him, both these bills will be back. With that, I think that concludes action on HCR 1. I also want to note Representative Knopp was excused absent today. He's back home. Also, Representative Gren is up on the fifth floor with operating budget testimony, so I just want to sort of speak to the respective absences. And thank you, Martha and Kelsey and Stephanie, for helping the committee run. Our next meeting is Tuesday, March 9th at 3 o'clock, and we'll adjourn at 3:52 p.m.